You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Thank you very much. Friends, welcome to this session, which is going to take the form of a conversation about different ways of making time to make peace. My name is Pat Bennett. I'm part of the Iona community, and I was for about 8 years involved in a project called the Spirituality of Conflict, which was producing reflections on the lectionary gospel passages through the lens of conflict. So I'm very excited to be here. I have a long-standing interest in how do we understand conflict and how do we understand peace. And there's a wonderful word in the Old Testament, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, shalom, which we usually just translate peace. And it's actually so much richer than that. The idea of peace that's held in shalom is not just an absence of strife, but it's a state of being well connected to ourselves, to our families, to our communities, to nations. So it's a very rich and deep thing to make peace, and that's what we're going to be thinking about this afternoon. So I'm really pleased to introduce John Cooper to you. John is the director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, with which the Iona community also has a long connection, because George MacLeod, who began the Iona community, was a lifelong member of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. And this is a fellowship, it's a faith-based charity which promotes active, non-violent ways of making peace and building peace. And that's what we're going to be thinking about this afternoon. So without more ado, I'm going to hand over to John.
Right. Good afternoon, everyone. It's really, really lovely. We've got lots of people here. If you're sat outside and trying to listen in, if someone on the grass can just wave to indicate they can at least hear, yep, that's fine. Lovely. Well, it's really good to have so many people here. I don't know any of your thoughts on peace, and we'll begin to explore it. But I think the closer we get to Greenbelt, the more it felt like there's lots of things that we need to talk about and think about. But the aim of our next hour is not to overwhelm anyone here, but to provoke you each to think and to consider, what could I be called to do at this moment? This moment could be a year, it could be a second, it could just be this afternoon. So it's a time of conversation. I'll hear some thoughts from you, I'll share some thoughts from me, and we'll see where we get to. Hopefully 2:45 and you can go off to other more exciting things. But as it's the Iona 10, I think we're going to start with a bit of singing. So if you sit comfortably, there's a nice short Iona tune. God welcomes all strangers and friends. I tend to then sing, God's love is strong and it never ends. So, God welcomes all strangers and friends. God's love is strong and it never ends. Okay, so let's try. God welcomes all strangers and friends. God's love is strong and it never ends. One more time. God welcomes all strangers and friends. God's love is strong and it never ends. And so we begin to connect, because all are welcome in this space. And if we think of the space from that start point, we're already beginning to think about peace. We had a very, very generous and helpful introduction, and my first question is to think to yourself for a moment, what does peace mean to you? Why are you here, in effect? What type of peace are you on the lookout for? So just think to yourself, and then you'll chat to your neighbor and we'll hear a bit of feedback. So have a think to yourself first. What does peace mean? Why are you here? Okay, the room's got a bit quiet. So if you let's hear some of what people have been talking about. I'll repeat it back for the benefit of those listening at home with abbreviations, probably. So, what sort of things were coming up in conversation? Yes.
Thinking about the intractable or seemingly intractable international conflicts. Israel, Gaza, Ukraine, Russia in particular.
Intractable global conflicts. What else were people talking about? Yes.
Yeah, and carry on. An end to violence in all its forms.
An end to violence in all its forms. If only there was a movement dedicated to... Oh, wait! If you come from the school, you can join the fellowship. That's a free chocolate for you later. Yes.
We talked about conflict in our own churches.
Yeah.
Finding some people quite tricky to deal with. And,
yep, conflict in our own churches, finding some people tricky to deal with. I would certainly sit on the center step on that one at times. There's an amazing network called Place for Hope that is linked in with the Methodist, the URC, the Church of Scotland, and one other one I now can't remember, helping provide church-based conflict resolution. Yes?
That if there's a connection between our own sense of peace and
yep.
the world peace. So if everybody knew they were loved and forgiven, truly, fully, then that's all
we'll
be putting out.
Wow. So, true peace begins within. If we all knew we were truly loved and forgiven, it would flow out and the world would change. Magnificent. Yes?
Something to do with peace through dialogue, or be able to hear things that you're not comfortable with but still sit with them and hear them, yeah. And examples of that in where it does work internationally. Yeah. But
peace, dialogue, sitting, even without microphones, trying to listen, recognising sometimes we might not like what's being heard, but it still needs to be said.
Powers out over the whole site.
Okay.
We have a power outage over the whole site.
Okay. So if you've not yet signed up to be an angel, I'm sure they'd love a few more pennies for the concert.
The good news is we can still record, but you'll get a lot of background noise.
So.
So speak up.
we were saying, is peace, is it living in harmony, or is it more just about lacking war?
Yeah. We'll come back, right, hold that. So, is it living in harmony or no war? And if you're a peace study student, don't leap up at this point. Yes?
To have peace, there's got to be complete respect.
To have peace, there's got to be complete respect. Well, the good news is, we've already, like a Birmingham Balti, got all the good ingredients in the dish for exploring together what peace means. And if you tease open scripture, either the Hebrew or the New Testament, you'll see peace appearing over 500 times. And as we heard in the introduction, it's not just the absence of war. It is something bigger, richer, and more fulfilling. It's about wholeness. It's about harmony. It's about turning over tables. It's about putting away the sword. It is about a vision of life that we heard earlier. If everyone felt loved and respected, that actually a new way of being begins to emerge. And we know that emerges because on Christmas Day we sing, Hail the Heaven-born Prince of Peace. And then we put that idea back in the loft with the lights, the tree, and everything else. Because, well, normal life gets in the way and those intractable wars keep appearing because wars are natural things, aren't they?
No.
But we can have all the head talk we want. I'm going to read a bit from scripture. I know it's greenbelt, but I thought I'm going to try and sneak a few Bible passages into a greenbelt session, so do forgive me. While Jesus was standing beside the lake of... Oh, I should have misread this. Gennesaret, the crowd were pressing in on him to hear the word of God. He saw two boats there. The fishermen had got out and were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and said, put me a little way out from the shore. There he sat down and he taught the crowds for the boat. I don't know how often you've looked in scripture and discovered Jesus trying to get away, and then through that discovering that people still wanted to hear from him. Hello. Goodbye.
It's clearly come back, but on it. Have I tugged with enthusiasm? Something's come out.
Try that one.
Hello?
No.
Is that Hannah? Okay.
It will reach its eventually.
Yeah. And the reason I start with this is for us in the fellowship, we often talk at the moment about three layers of peace. Peace in ourselves, peace in our community, and peace in our world. Because that balance of what's called positive peace, the flourishing, the goodness, and negative peace, the absence of war and conflict, can get built at any level. But what it's not is a simple intellectual exercise where you wake up one day and think, I'm going to be a peacemaker. There's always that crunch moment where you discover, whether it's in yourself, your community, or your world, you need to do something. And just as sometimes it's with Jesus, when he's desperately trying to withdraw, is bam, when you're then faced with the reality that you are being called to do something. So I want you to think and talk to each other now about a time that you felt unprepared, yet called into doing something. It doesn't have to be about peace. But when have you discovered you're in a place and having to do something you weren't necessarily ready for? Have a chat. Okay. Begin to wrap up our conversation. What have we discovered about ourselves and finding ourselves in unexpected situations? Who'd like to share one or two thoughts about what you've been discussing? Yes.
So I refused conscription in South Africa, and I thought I was very radical and, you know, righteous until two military policemen knocked on my door, and I shat myself, almost literally.
So a moment of shock, completed a form, said I'm not taking part, and then the military turned up and said, you said you're not taking part, and it became real.
Well,
it
turns out they were looking for someone else.
Oh!
But the lesson was really salutary.
Yeah.
The experience was really, really, really valuable.
Wow, thank you. Okay, that's one scale. I'm only saying that just to encourage others to share their stories. Anyone else got a...
Well, we both had one that was entirely thrust on us unexpectedly. First I was talking to, had forgotten about this until the end.
Yeah.
And my situation again was, so my situation was having to stop an anti-trans film being shown at the church that I was senior steward of. So completely unanticipated, wasn't looking for conflict, but just had to sort it out.
Yeah.
And the person I was talking to, do you want to say?
A few years ago, we were going to a church which we didn't realise was blindly pro-Israel. We eventually pointed out to them that there were more complications to the situation than that, and we were manoeuvred out of the church very quickly.
So we've got, in effect, a public hire event turns a bit sour and you need to suddenly realise as a responsible person you need to do something. Preaching and teaching emerging that goes against what you think, and through that being gently shown the door. None of us could have prepared for most of us. Then we've got one last to throw in.
I met up with a young Ethiopian friend who's 16. I hadn't seen for a while, and she was telling me that her and her friends spend 8 hours every day on TikTok. They're all absolutely addicted to it. And I've talked to other young friends who also say similarly that they see no way out of it.
Right. So never-ending TikToks. Ironically, next year we are going to be advertising someone to help get FOR onto TikTok. So if they want to use it for good, to educate the world in increasing military spending and things like that, then chat to me. But it's always good to think that we hit those moments where we may or may not find ourselves crapping our pants and deciding, what do I do in this moment? And so as we begin to think about building, first of all, peace in ourselves, remember, first of all, it's messy. You're probably unprepared, but you should always take time to sit with yourself. Thich Nhat Hanh, founder of the Pond Village Buddhist community, was a lifelong friend to the International Fellowship, particularly Martin Luther King, who was a big member in the United States of America. And his broad principles of mindfulness, I think, are quite helpful. Regardless of what you think of mindfulness, this translates well into self-reflection periods. For him, it's important to think about, in the way you're being, are you holding reverence for life? Are you focusing on building true happiness? And that sounds really shallow, but what that is are you aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, oppression? And as a result, are you seeking, as we heard earlier, to cultivate loving kindness and learn ways to work for the well-being of others? Are you in yourself looking and practicing true love, awaring of how love can be used and abused, and holding yourself responsible for how you are relating to and engaging with others? Are you practicing loving speech and deep listening? It's a tough one. We can all think of times people have said something to us which they may not remember, but you do. But when someone's talking, are we all being present in the moment and listening to what they're saying, including if it makes us feel uncomfortable? Or are we just stirring up inside, ready to respond and get our view across? And finally, are we practicing love on our bodies, no matter what they look like, how much we like them, how much we detest bits of them, which bit wobbles, which bit does what? Because if we're not caring for our bodies, can we help care for others and recognize them as loved and valuable? And I think those principles move us beyond the simple, I'm going to sit and say a prayer and suddenly I'll be okay, into a much greater spiritual understanding of who am I in this moment? What powers and almost abilities do I have to do something? And sometimes Jesus ran away and prayed. And other times he tried to withdraw and realized, no, I'm being called to do something. And if you feel yourself in that moment as an act of self-care, well, I must do something, then take love and nourishment is your starting point. Because love is radical. Nourishment is about wholeness and building up. And in a world of hatred and pain, words of support and challenge and opportunity to others begin to be transformative. And that's why taking time to be more aware of yourself in that moment is so vital to building peace. Otherwise, you'll suddenly find yourself stuck, burnt out, and unable to keep doing what you feel you're called to do.
For step two.
You've all woken up. I want you to think for a moment about the communities that you have left to retreat onto the boat of Greenbelt and sit here in. Where have you left? What have you seen in those communities, possibly even in the last few days? If peace is about wholeness, nourishment, fullness of life, as well as the absence of conflict, oppression, and injustice, what do you see as you walk among your local streets? Have a think.
Thank you.
Okay. What have we left behind to be here today? What sort of stories of your local community were emerging? Who'd like to offer some thoughts? Yes. Bored, curious teenagers let loose in a church. Bit of mischief, but actually it's become a welcoming space. We're going to come back to that. That's a really powerful story to start with. So, we've got protests outside places of accommodation for refugees, sometimes using Christian imagery, sometimes using the English flag or the Union Jack. Those are two different flags. I grew up in Scotland. It's quite clear there are multiple flags in one country. Also got people standing up and saying, actually, love your neighbour. We know and love the people who are not choosing to live there and yet being demonised for living there. We're going to come back to the far right in a moment. Any other stories anyone wants to throw in of what they've seen or left behind? Yes. So everyone just glued to their telephones and not being visibly present with those they are walking among. I'll phrase it like that, partly because I felt seen when you talked about people with buggies on their phone. I was like, yeah, that's me when I was getting my youngest to sleep. But okay, yes. No, go for different. So we've got dementia bubbling away, growing up, carers wondering, can I do this if I let go? They're my life commitment. We've got other families who appear comfortable, but underneath may not. And you said they look at peace. So one of my favorite images from Martin Luther King is he talks about peace that stinks in the nostrils of God. He was a powerful preacher. And he was delivering a sermon using that phrase just after some riot police had cleared some black protesters from a segregated university in the south of America. Oh, sorry, in south of the USA. And the reason he was saying it was peace that stank in the nostrils of God was because there was no peace because the protesters had been gone, because the fundamental topic had not been dealt with. The segregation still existed. Everyone who benefited from segregation felt at peace, but the community itself was not. And I love that visual image. I did do a quick look on Bible Gateway and discovered it is a biblical image. So do throw it into a search engine of choice if you're like me, a Methodist, and can't ever remember the passage, but the images and the stories you quite like. And that's some of what we begin to look at as we think about building peace in our communities. If we go back to our idea of positive peace, full flourishing, and negative peace, removal of conflict, we'll find in different ways at different times we're called to do different things. Opening up our churches is a great act of peacemaking because our what's called civic space, free community space, has been heavily privatized. Community centers shut down, sold off. Shopping centers, those are often privately owned. So quite a few years ago, Labour Behind the Label, a brilliant little campaigning charity based in Bristol looking at fashion, were trying to do protests outside certain shops saying, do you know who sewed your clothes? And they were removed because, in this case in Birmingham, the Bullring, the big shopping centre, is privately owned. We, as the public, are allowed to go in and spend our money, but we're not allowed to ask questions or make a fuss. And churches underestimate the value of still being a free-to-access, free-to-use public space, just as we were hearing, where sometimes you can just open the doors and say, bored? Come and sit here. We might be able to find something for you to do. The more challenging one, of course, as we were hearing from Lee, comes to actually, if you can see people stirring up hatred, what do you do? Has anyone else seen hatred of others being stirred up in their own local community? Would anyone like to share a story from that? Do you want to come forward? Because I think we might hear more than a few words, so I don't want to have to repeat massive. It means we can all listen well, including me. You don't have to say where it is, or you can do. Your choice.
So we live in quite a violent community in Essex. And although in some ways it's quite a friendly community, as you walk around, everyone will talk to you. There's big family networks. There's a big settled traveller network. And when they cross, there's the whole family gets involved. And we've just had quite a big fight that's broken out. People getting quite seriously hurt, guns involved. So it looks like it's a really welcoming community until different facets of that community have a go at each other.
Okay, someone else got a story experience to share, and then I'll give you a few thoughts in response. Yeah. I would say come on down, but that's a bit too much like a game show.
Try and be brief, John. I live in Epping, in also in Essex, and our hotel, our asylum hotel, has been the subject of an awful lot of interest by the community recently. And I mean, there's lots I could say, but I think the my initial moment was when I just turned up the very first demonstration against the hotel. And I just turned up thinking, oh, I'll just hold a tiny little quiet space in the corner here, just indicate that not everybody is anti the hotel. And to see hundreds of people, many of whom I knew, parents of children that my kids had been to school with, you know, lots of people I kind of half knew. And the violence and the aggression and the hatred and the language and the just this visceral, it was a wave of horror from my point of view. I was completely floored. And I don't think I've really got to grips with that. And that was a month ago. That was the first demonstration. And since then, that has obviously been repeated twice a week. More than a month ago. Anyway, sorry, it's been repeated. But it's that first seeing that hatred, that anger, and not understanding it and trying, yeah, to hold space in that has been really, really challenging. Thank you, John.
So what we're beginning to hear is quite often, as you were naming so precisely, discovering new things about the area around us we might not have realised, where that false peace is established. And we face decisions in that moment. And the reason I started by asking us to think about building peace in ourselves is if you're going to go and stand outside the hotel with a placard of love, not knowing who you might see or recognize the other side of the barricade, in effect, you need to know in yourself that that is where you're called to be. It's not where scrolling on your phone you see everyone else's, you think, well, I might sneak along and see what happens. You need to do the preparation work, but you can also do that within community. And I'm a strong advocate of having two or three people who you chat through with before you decide to do anything. Because just like the Quakers have a great idea of holding in the light, of upholding. You know, we might not all be called to go and stand outside the hotel, but Lee might choose to if he knows that three or four people are praying for him and someone will meet him for a coffee afterwards to go, how was it? And this is what I mean by beginning to think more carefully, particularly in times of division, about what is your calling in this moment. Hopefully we'll all have fairly similar values, you know, open the Bible, what do we do? Well, you feed the naked. No, you don't feed the naked. You clothe the naked, feed the hungry. The sad thing is that is all you're going to remember from this whole hour, isn't it? But you know, Jesus is fairly clear repeatedly when challenged by people who try to know better. He's like, no, just go and love people and show that love and bring it to life. And sometimes that is through protest and convening people, or it might be as you've been shocked to then convene church ministers or other leaders to say to the local press or in social media, here is a statement to say, actually, we are a community of love, but we hear that people are hurting. But actually going to shout against those who've fled situations of warfare is not going to solve that hurt. So there's a middle ground that we can step where we're not trying to be everything to everyone. but you need to take time to think within yourself and with others, what are we being called to do? And then from that, where is that love leading us? Is it challenge or is it acts of love, support and compassion? Is it throwing open the doors to the teenagers and seeing what happens and just hoping the property steward wasn't on duty that day because they won't like what they've seen? There are different options that we take. When it comes then to social media, it's also important to think about both the phrases, what voices you amplify, what you're sharing, and also what you're listening to. If your local Facebook group, for example, is going south, you might want to chip in, and then you discover no one's listening. Switch off. Go and find other people in your community who do like and value others and want to provide help and support. Don't get into an argument with someone else on a screen because they never end well. It's important to be a voice, but not to hurt yourself in the process. And I know this. I look at my own little corner of Birmingham that I live in. The houses have declined. The shops have imploded. The local spa, they keep a baseball bat behind the desk. The police occasionally turn up. I've sat with someone as they'd overdosed on drugs when I went to try and get my dinner one night. You know, it's pretty grim. And I can't do everything. And I face those, what do I do in these moments? And sometimes I've gone home and rung the police. A bit like we were hearing earlier, you know, when the fight breaks out, you can't just go and go, hey, everyone, bit of peace and love. That's not going to solve the gun right then. It might be you get others to come in and pause it, but actually the work is then found at other points, providing opportunities for community and people of goodwill to emerge. So think carefully when it comes to building peace in your community. If you think you're going to be called into conflict, do it being supported. And if you're not feeling called into that, think about how can I take action to build a space of love and support, knowing that others will both support that, but fundamentally, conflict and injustice, someone is not going to benefit. So actually, they're the ones who need to be sat beside, who need to be fed, who need to be homed, and new things will then emerge. So now on to the easy one, world peace. Oh, I've only got 10 minutes left. If only it was that easy. I think we're going to do a hand exercise. So if people are able to put their hands out straight. Okay, stretch your arms out like this. I'm going to say some statements. And the more you agree, I know it's green belt. I first used Bible. Now I'm going to say put your hands in the air. I'm totally not going to get booked again. But the more you agree with what I say, the higher your hands go, the more you disagree, or the lower they go, okay? So we're going to start with something easy. I had breakfast, even though it's day two at Greenbelt. If you agree, because you definitely found breakfast, hands in the air. Whoa, revivals are coming. Okay, arms back down again. Next question. There's been at least one talk in the Wild Goose tent where I've been so far out on the grass, I've gone and done something else. Yeah, there we go. So we've got the idea. We've moved our arms around a bit. Okay. First question. The world at the moment looks more towards war than peace. Okay. Good Anglican response there. Bit of yeah, not quite confirmed. Okay. Next question. I, and that's each one of you, not putting it all on me, feel able to show my support for peace in the world. Okay, we're going to pause. So we've had more enthusiasm. We've had a bit of pessimism that the world is probably pointing towards war, but more of you feel able to possibly show something. So if you haven't spoken yet, this is the awkward moment, but I can't remember who has and hasn't, so you're in the clear. If you haven't spoken yet, but you did feel at the moment you can do something for peace, would you just like to share it with us? Yes. So I'm going to repeat back, but I think it's worth thinking back through some of the different stages I've outlined. So think, who am I? What am I to do in this situation? What am I seeing around me? And then what do I do? Gentleman here is like, I need to go to Greenbelt. I think we all know that. I need to pack the car or you know, pack my bags. We all know that panic quite well, or I certainly do. My house does. I need to tidy up when I get home because it's like a whirlwind has gone through it. But actually, what I can see in my community and the world around is a whole load of lies about something I actually know about being spread. So I'm going to pause what I should be doing and in that moment, write up some of the lived experience that I've seen and heard of refugees in this country. Some really good peacemaking there, because it's about who am I, what can I do, what influence can I show. It might not change the world, but actually it's out there. Thank you. Someone else who raised their hand said, yeah, I think I might be able to do something at the moment. If you're vague about it, that's equally fine. Yes. Yeah, so we're pointing up. Yeah, so why are you pointing up? Yeah, big march for Palestine in Glasgow, but I've done it a while. Is it doing anything? Well, let's think for a moment. In fact, let's go back to everyone on their phones. I had a really interesting conversation with a woman about a year ago who was sat looking at her phone, and I spotted she was watching video from Gaza. And I had a conversation with her. I was like, you know what? Who do you follow? Why do you do that? And she's like, well, I've got connections there. And if I go on TikTok and other forms of social media, I can actually hear real people talking about what life's like. And I then followed a few people, and she probably thought nothing else of the conversation, but I became more aware. And A to B protests, which basically is what you're describing, have a really bad reputation. What change do they bring? Well, actually, there's a few different changes. The change in yourself, realizing you are not alone. My basic rule of things, so long as you pass a Jesus test of 2 or 3, then you've got something. If you can't even get 2 or 3, then, you know, change the record. But the protests for Palestine have been growing generally for quite a long time. And as you keep going and people say to you, oh, what are you doing this at? I can't go, actually, I'm going on the Palestine protest. There might be someone else who suddenly hits that moment like, oh, my friend cares about this. I know I should probably because it's in the news or whatever, but actually my friend cares. Maybe I should look at it. But then also you should never forget the power of sharing with people back in Palestine or them hearing that they are not forgotten. So a week ago, I had the great privilege of being invited by the Iona community to be part of a week of looking at peace. We had all sorts of people with us. It was really interesting. Quite a lot of the room were Americans. And I just felt that we needed to do something for peace as part of that week. Otherwise, it was all going to be up here and none of it was quite going to translate to there. So quite a lot of the aid and development agencies, including Christian Aid, for whom I have a lot of time, have a basic action called Red Line for Gaza. And it simplifies things in a way that at some point people get really outraged by. But its principle is this. There is a red line that has been incredibly crossed, where hunger and starvation is being used as a weapon of war in how the Israeli army are acting. And so we held on the little jetty at Iona a Red Line for Gaza vigil. There were people there from our week who said, I couldn't do this where we live. I don't feel safe, but here I can. And they were so moved by that being the day they could take that action. There were also people who'd got off the ferry who were like, oh, what's this? And then quietly giving thumbs up. And then there was someone whose workplace was very near where we were stood, who, in the way that I love when you do things like protests, just moved a few things about to make sure we could be visible and present in a way that we felt we couldn't because it intruded on their space. And I think the final thing is never underestimate someone getting that one chance to say what they think, even if for you it's the 10th or the 15th or the 30th and it's raining and it's wet. And Greg's queues down the road, so there isn't even any coffee. Because for the person who's found it for that first time, that public act, who knows where they're going to go. So keep it there. Well, actually, with both hands. Careful. Both hands. But think about others who are joining you and what strength. And I then sent photographs to our international fellowship president, Zugby Zugby, who lives in Bethlehem, who sent me a very long message back about how moved he was to hear, basically, in a little island on Western Isles of Scotland, there were 30 people just standing in silent vigil for 10 minutes, remembering children in Gaza who didn't have enough food to eat. And when it comes to big issues, we're going to face them in different ways. Some of it is exactly what we've discussed. And some of it is sometimes asking some awkward questions and being comfortable to do so. So, military spending. I know I've got a few people like Martin who know much more than me about it because he looks at nuclear stuff and there the numbers are far bigger. But as a society, politicians are encouraging us to passively accept the militarization of society and rapid increases in military spending. But military spending doesn't come from nowhere. It's not just freshly printed money. Money is stopped elsewhere to then spend on weapons. And I would encourage all of you at some point, if you're in communication about anything, almost, with your elected officials, and you should all do that. You should all write to your MPs at some point. Begin to raise questions about military spending. Show that you're paying some attention. Because at the moment, we're in the situation where, classic example, I know Steve isn't too keen on this, but forgive me. Last year, the I will call it the Warm Homes grant to pensioners was cut by the government. They've sort of come back on that. That cost about £2.3 billion a year. A few weeks later, the government said, and we will keep writing checks to underwrite £4 billion worth of military aid going to Ukraine. Now, I doubt anyone sat in the Treasury going, right, we'll take from there and give to there. But overall, someone is shaking the bucket and saying, okay, we're going to shift the allocation. And if we think back to peace in ourselves and our community being about providing the basic tools and essentials for life and flourishing, investing more in weapons of war, which A, massively pollute, and those of you who were here last year know, carbon emissions of conflict are not counted, and yet the Pentagon is the world's biggest user of fossil fuels. So that's pretty grim. But also, the stuff of long-lasting, flourishing life is not being supplied because we're instead investing in stuff that's being used to destroy, to kill, to maim. And we need to begin as people of faith and people interested in peace to just nudge back this passive acceptance that war is inevitable. And you may not get a warm response, but by simply bringing that prompt, you're doing something that few other people do. And in this moment, it's incredibly important. Earlier this year, the government brought out a defense and security white paper? I can't quite remember its proper title, which in effect said, we need to remilitarize society. We need to be ready for war. And depending on who you listen to, some say within about 2 years, this country could be at war. Now, every one of those points is a political decision. Every one of those points will have impacts on all of our communities. And every one of those points can be challenged and a better way walked forward if people begin, when I say to pay attention, some of you may think, oh no, he's some lunatic who spends too much time on the internet. That's not what this is about. It's about beginning the conversation. I was put in a position to do that. So my local MP is the Minister for Veterans Affairs. He was one of the people literally parachuted in with 2 days to go before nomination shut, was elected, and I was invited to talk on a panel about world poverty. And he got up and he gave some of what I've just given you, you know, this is the most dangerous I've seen the world in 40, 50 years. He didn't go on about the military being good opportunities for young people. That's probably going to be next month when he does a youth panel. But we had it all. So I got up and said, look, we're in a world of choices. And at one point he got quite defensive because he's like, I'm not stood here saying war's a good idea. I was like, but at the same time, Where is the investment in institutions like the United Nations? The United Nations was formed 80 years ago out of the ashes of the Second World War, when nations got together and said, you know what? We've had two world wars in about 40 years. Surely we must do better than this. Now, we haven't quite answered that question, but surely we should be. And as people involved in churches, a lot of historic church denominations have representation at the United Nations. Often through things like women's networks and other, what you might phrase, auxiliary groups. And at the International Fellowship, we've got representation at the UN Human Rights Council. So we occasionally write there about conscientious objectors. And we need to start highlighting, as well as why are we spending more on military, actually, where is the international diplomacy? Where are the spaces being supported where conversations can happen? Because the more effort that's put on there, the closer we get back to what you began with, which is actually who's doing the listening to awkward conversations? Who's opening the doors and saying, we must be better than this? You know, war in Ukraine, 3 years, how many billions of pounds worth of weapons have been wasted? How many lives? You know, we're close to 1 million people from Russia and Ukraine who've been killed or maimed. Surely the world's better than that. And that's what our peace challenge is. So whether you're thinking, I need to just spend some more time tending my own soul in an era of complex lives and situations, or actually my community's beginning to turn in ways I do not recognize, I need to begin to build relationships, build allies, and either open a space or stand to show that we stand for different. Or you look at the world and through the relationships that you have, or you may find in your church, you're hearing stories of wars known or forgotten. There is a place for you as a person for peace. And at a moment where we have more conflicts than we have in the last 20, 30 years, and I think it's 1 in 8 of the world's population affected by war and conflict, if we truly want to welcome Jesus, the Prince of Peace, we need to do something for peace. And the reason this was a workshop and dialogue is no one person, not even the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which I'd love you all to join, do come to our tent, has all the answers. But between us, by facing towards peace and trying to walk together towards it, we can find some answers. We can support each other, and we can show, as a people of peace, it is possible, no matter how dark and grim things can sometimes feel. Thank you all so much for what you've shared. There is so much more we could talk about. Maybe we'll be booked for next year.
And on behalf of... We can finish with a short prayer. Would you like to do that?
That's fine. I just saw you waving and didn't want an act of conflict where you're like, finish. So a very short prayer to conclude with, which was written by Barbara Glasson, former president of the Methodist Peace Fellowship, and is in a brilliant book she wrote about sort of things for everyday peacemakers, which is written, published by Sacristy Press. And don't buy it to read from cover to cover. Buy it to just pull out ever so often. So let us pray. Help me not to measure life by any standard other than the rule of peace and love. Give me capacity to go an extra mile, turn another cheek, draw circles of peace in the sifting sands of conflict. Help me not to measure others with a straight rule, a rigid rule, an unbendable rule, an unbreakable rule, but only by the span of your open, loving, accepting arms. Amen.
John, thank you very much for a really... I'm just trying to think of an appropriate way of describing it. It's fascinating, but also encouraging and challenging. I think it's really good that you've reminded us that we all have within ourselves the means of becoming peacemakers and the importance of doing that in community. Thank you for reminding us that these are complex things, but that should not deter us from taking action, and that for each of us that action might be different, but that we can support and encourage one another, and that it's an imperative for those of us who are committed to the kingdom of God that we should also be committed to the ways of peace and to the making of peace. So on behalf of everyone, thank you very much for being with us here this afternoon.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.